Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. Episode number 243 if you're watching along with us on the network. And it's funny because this is kind of a terrible episode of Raw, but the last segment pretty much changed wrestling. So it's a very historical episode, and the last segment was mental. But
I mean, shame we had to sit through the rest of the episode to get to it.
I know, that was good, because in my head I'm watching it going, like, oh, you know, the closing segment's tremendous. And I was like, the more I'm sitting there going, oh, we're having to sit through a lot of shite to get to it. We really are. So let's talk about the shite. So Paul Bearer comes out at the start of the show, and he, you know, talks about what happened with Undertaker and Kane. They're chatting, you suck at him. And then he basically, like, explains that making, like, a false reconciliation was all part of their scheme, and they'd be carrying it out for months, and, you know, he was in it all along. And then Undertaker's music hits, and some druids wheel a casket down to the ring, but when the lid opens, the corners explode with fire, and it's Kane. And Paul Bearer introduces him as the last surviving member of the Undertaker's family, and then he says, my favourite line, I'm Paul Bearer, and you're not. This was... See if this show could have been the opening segment and the closing segment. Happy days.
Then it would have been an excellent episode of Retro Raw. Unfortunately, more stuff happened in the middle. But no, Paul Bearer is so great here. He looks so pleased with himself when he comes out. He is just a smug motherfucker. And he's like, you know, when the crowd is chanting at him that he sucks, he's like, well, if I do, I must be good. He's like, they should have given me a Golden Globe last week for that. Or last night for that interview I did 2 weeks ago, you know, and you know, when they saluted each other, when the Undertaker and Kane saluted each other, then Paul Bearer knew he had us, the crowd, and he knew he had the Undertaker, and we were all falling for his scheme. And oh, it's so good. He mentioned some little girl crying as splinters flew as Kane was chopping up the casket. He's like, and that little girl was crying. And I'm like, oh man, this is so good.
Yeah, this is the thing that's funny, is because, like, this is the period where, like, WWF are making enough changes that like, the tide's starting to turn. Like, people are starting to switch from WCW for the big angles, you know, for the Austin stuff, you know, Austin, Undertaker, Michaels, when they had their match, and the Rock stuff, some of the Foley stuff, and all that, but there's also 50% of absolute crap that I didn't remember it being as crap as it was. Like, I don't remember, but that, it's terrible.
It's very bad.
And I used, like, to watch Shotgun on a Saturday morning for more.
Why would you do that to yourself?
I was a kid. It was cool when I was a kid. Like, it was funny how shite Jeff Jarrett was. But anyway, so, really hot opening segment.
I will say, when they started wheeling out the casket, like, I didn't know if it was going to be Kane or what. I figured it wasn't going to be The Undertaker. I figured it was just going to be some sort of fake out, right? But I do have to say, when The Undertaker eventually comes back, there is no way that I'm going to not be disappointed. Because remember when he got buried alive and came back as a sad bat and it was my favorite thing? Like, well, there's no way that he's going to top sad bat Undertaker.
Until he gets a motorcycle in a couple of years.
Exactly, but I know that the motorcycle is not coming now. If he were going to come out as Biker Taker because he got, you know, casketed, then that would be great. But
I do think that 1998 will be one of your more tolerable years for The Undertaker, because there's a lot of character stuff with him that happens.
I like, and, like, that you know me well enough now not to say you're going to love The Undertaker in 1998.
Well, the thing is, maybe you do end up loving him, but if I say it, it's far less likely to happen. If I just go in with low expectations for you, then you're not going to be like, there's, you know, there's no pressure on anything, you know.
Yes.
But there's, like, and I can't remember, there's moments later on in the year when, like, Vince McMahon's cutting heel promos and The Undertaker just turns and looks at him, and the looks he gives him, they're exceptional.
But I mean, The Undertaker does excel at looks far more than he excels at speaking.
But, and I guess it's hard, I mean, it's a weird character to speak with, right? You're a dead guy. Like, what do you do? It's a very weird character. It'll all escalate. So, again, I mean, the thing is, watching this story back with Undertaker and Kane, it's even better than I remember it being. It's so good. Like,
I mean, Kane is just incredible, and he hasn't said a word. You know, like, he hasn't really done much of anything. He's just been this big badass motherfucker who has just come out of a casket and chopped up a casket and set it on fire and all this stuff. And I love Kane. I absolutely love him.
And they're building the, you know, now obviously, where is the Undertaker? You know, he's gone because Kane's done this to him. So when will he be back? What's going to happen between then? We'll find out. Then we get DX backstage. Triple H says that he made Owen Hart look like a loser and thinks that Owen Hart should head down south too since he can't cut it. And then Sean's, you know, very sort of sarcastically feeling bad about what happened to The Undertaker. And to prove that all the WWF fans are not as bad as people think they are, they're going to go and search for The Undertaker, which can only mean that they will not find The Undertaker. That's all I can assure you will happen.
I mean, it stands to reason that they will not find The Undertaker. I mean, when as soon as DX said that they were going to go out and find The Undertaker and they were going to bring him here and they promised The Undertaker, I was like, oh no, is there going to be a midget Undertaker? Like there was a midget Bret Hart.
Oh, like thankfully, you would love a midget Undertaker. Come on.
It could be kind of amazing.
We get, you know, because it's 1998, right? So you may think, look, 1998 is a new year, it's a new start. Maybe there's no more gang wars. No, there is. Still.
Always and forever, DOA versus Nation of Domination are fighting again.
Yeah, at least it's not the Breakers.
Reasons, I guess.
So, yeah, basically, DOA, it's the DOA against Farouk, D'Lo, and Kama. But they end up in a brawl towards the end. Referee disqualifies everyone. And The Rock and Mark Henry come down to outnumber DOA. But then Ken Shamrock and Ahmed Johnson come out. I was going to say Ken Shamrock and Ahmed Johnson run out. Ken Shamrock runs like he's trying to get away from a bomb. Ahmed Johnson runs like he's just left a nursing home and he needs a shit.
I mean, Ahmed Johnson stumbles now. He doesn't run. He stumbles.
But
it's unfortunate
the crowd
to see
are
the decline
their,
of Ahmed Johnson.
The decline? The decline happened 6 months ago. This is the death. What at the wake?
It's true. Who do you think looks more dead, The Undertaker or Ahmed Johnson?
Oh, Ahmed Johnson. Fully.
Which is not good because The Undertaker has been buried alive and put in a casket and his character is literally the dead man. And Ahmed Johnson definitely looks worse.
Because my favorite thing is like part of Undertaker, and I guess Kane to an extent as well, is they have to kind of move slow and be these kind of monster people who are, you know, they're like horror movie characters. They're not supposed to be. Ahmed Johnson does not have that excuse.
He does not.
Being shite is not an excuse.
He just doesn't have body parts that work anymore.
He doesn't. I fully believe that in early 98, I could probably be a better in-ring competitor than Ahmed Johnson.
You know what?
With no in-ring experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's wrong.
But the crowd do lose their mind for Ahmed Johnson and Ken Shamrock. They are going crazy.
I mean, how can you not, really? Because Ken Shamrock just looks so mental.
There's a bit
here,
though.
I mean, they both are.
Now, Kevin Kelly will not... Kevin Kelly's now the commentator on New Japan Pro Wrestling. You know, he's a huge commentator, Ring of Honor for a long time. But I figured out in this episode why Kevin Kelly did not last long as a commentator in the WWF. And that's because he chooses, in January of 1998, on this particular episode of Raw, to say the words, with no irony, Ahmed has never looked better.
I mean, at that point, all credibility was lost.
You can't recover from that.
You can't.
You cannot recover. Like, there's haha, and there's like, this man needs to be reassigned immediately.
It's like, I really think that Kevin Kelly needs to get his eyes checked, or his brain checked, or maybe both.
Ahmed has never looked better. Really?
Ahmed has looked better in every single instance. Like,
a year ago when we started the show, you were commentating when he was better.
I mean, apparently amnesia has set in too, because Ahmed Johnson used to be great. When we started Retro Raw, I really liked Ahmed Johnson. He was fantastic. He is not fantastic anymore.
Do you know what you missed by 2 months? Was the
what?
Was the six-man team of Ahmed Johnson, Psycho Sid, and Shawn Michaels.
I mean, did they beat up Shawn Michaels at the end?
No.
Oh.
Your wish was not complied there. Up next, though, so you know, it's very clear we're heading to DOA and Ahmed and Shamrock against the Nation. That's where we're going. Up next.
Oh boy, am I excited for that. So a hearse has arrived at the building, which was interesting. But can we talk about the Vic Venom ad?
Oh,
are you going to talk
about
the Vic Venom ad?
Do you think I was going to miss that?
I hope not.
Vince Russo is on Raw as Vic. So for anyone who wasn't a fan at this point, if you bought Raw magazine in 1996, 1997, there was a Vic Venom column, and he would, like, you know, do weird, he would do, like, predictions, and he would, you know, he's like the inside source and whatever. Vic Venom was a pseudonym of Vince Russo, and he's on here, as the edgy sort of editor for the Raw magazine, and, go ahead and tell me about Vic Venom.
I mean, what even is he talking about? So the ad is shot all in black and white and with weird cuts and angles and stuff. Like, he's trying to be the NWO, right?
Yeah, was he just like, can we just do like an NWO ad without MD Talented or Relevant?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what this is. And then, I don't know, he's talking about how edgy the magazine is and how sexy it is. And I don't even remember what all he said, but...
Did you find the magazine sexy?
I didn't find the magazine very sexy. I mean, it looked like Vic Venom really wanted to fuck Raw magazine, is what I got from this ad.
I mean, I think that's accurate, really. I don't think you're wrong.
I was baffled by the whole thing. And like, I don't know, it's one of those things, kind of like the DX intro, where they just have, you know, interspersed random ladies grinding on things and whatnot. It seems like that's what they want to do, and they want to be like, hey, look, sex, guys. It's amazing.
So, up next, though, after Vic Venom, we get the match that nobody wants, again, Mark Merrow versus Tom Brandy. I groaned so hard. Because I had a feeling that I was like, if I, 20 years later, still hate Tom Brandy, it can't have just been a one and done. Because I'd have got over it. He's still right here.
And he's still bad, too. Like, so Mark Merrow wants Sable to come. So Sable comes out and she's wearing a cat suit, right? Like, she has a closet full of cat suits, I assume. And she looks, you know, she looks like Sable. And Mark wants her to wear a robe that says Property of Marvelous Mark Merrow, so he makes her cover up. But not until after the crowd already gets to see her. And so, of course, the crowd is cheering Sable and booing Mark Merrow. And then they do cheer when Tom Brandy hits Mark Merrow, but it's just because they hate Mark Merrow, because he took away their viewing of Sable's tits.
I mean, I like Sondra, whenever we're at wrestling events in America together, to wear a Property of Inside the Ropes sheet over her. And it usually works pretty well. We can find her in a crowd. You know, she's less sexualized. It's all good. So,
oh yeah.
You know, I can't see anything wrong with you know, branding a woman with clothing. say that she's your property. Cannot see anything that could go wrong with that plan.
But it's not problematic at all.
No, Tom Brandy is terrible though, but not terrible in a good way or a fun way. Just crap and bland. And he actually reminds me of Tino Sabatelli.
Actually, I can see that. I think Tino Sabatelli is better, but yeah.
I just look at Tino Sabatelli and he's Tom Brandy to me. That's all he is.
Do you think that's why you had such hatred toward Tino Sabatelli?
Probably.
Is that subconsciously in your mind you were going back to 20 years ago and thinking you look like Tom Brandy, that motherfucker?
Most probably, yeah, because I still hate Tom Brandy. But yeah, basically, they have a match, which is crap, and then Sable gets an apron, Mark Merrow low blows Brandy, TKO 1-2-3. And then
at some point, a man comes out to give Sable a bouquet of flowers. I think that's important.
Yes, because then, right after the match, Mark Merrow takes the flowers and beats Tom Brandy with them. I love the idea, beating a man with flowers. Like, is that painful?
No, they're not even roses, so they don't have thorns.
So you're just like...
Like, if they were roses and had thorns and you were stabbing someone, I could see that being painful. If it was a cactus, I could see that being painful.
You just try to get to that next segment, I'm about to talk about it. So...
you know, I... Sorry, I'm laughing because I saw in my notes, I've paused this match twice to watch the XFL song on repeat because it's my new favorite thing.
The XFL, I was
so bored during Tom Brandy versus Mark Merrow that I just watched the XFL song because the XFL is back and I can't stop laughing about it.
Oh, it's so good. You know,
Alan pointed out to me that we're going to, on Retro Raw, we're going to get to the XFL right around the same time as the XFL in real life.
Yeah, that's ironic in so many ways. The commentary team though are saying, you know, will Tom Brandy ever beat Mark Merrow? Who gives a fuck?
I don't care. I genuinely don't care. Well, the problem is that I do want to see Mark Merrow get beat up, right? Because Mark Merrow is atrocious to Sable. And like I said, I think I would be more into this story and wanting Sable to get retribution if Sable were a better performer, but unfortunately she's not and she's terrible. So that kind of hurts the angle for me too. Mark Miro is very good at being unlikable. I do want to see him get beat up, but Tom Brandy is not the valiant babyface who's there to do the job. I mean, he could be literally anyone in this position, and he is literally anyone because they chose Tom fucking Brandy. And I don't hate him as much as you do. I just, you know, he's boring to me. I don't pay him much attention.
DX are backstage. They find the hearse and they plan to hit Undertaker with Triple H's crutch as they open the back door. But when they open the back door, a bunch of like women just come out of the hearse because women who want a party hang about in hearses, apparently.
I did not understand this.
And
like,
but Sean Hunter just, you know, getting the car with the chicks, and China's just there closing the door and just wondering about her career choices.
I mean, she just rolls her eyes. She can't be arsed with these people. She's just like, no, no, no. What are these boys doing? I love China. I think she's great.
I really want to know the proximity in the arena of where the hearse is to where the limo is. Because up next,
yeah,
the limo appears with Mike. And like, you know, we keep saying it. I cannot overstate how big a deal it is that Mike Tyson is here on Raw. I mean, this is huge. Like, probably bigger than Ronda Rousey and Conor McGregor combined. Like, it's so big. And he's there, and you don't know what he's going to do, you don't know what he's going to say, so I think it's a good idea, it was a good hook to have him appear here in the first hour, because it's kind of hooking you in for the rest of the show, to see what he's going to do. And, you know, through 1997, when we watched Retro Raw, you've come to me at various points and said, why did they bring this guy back? Why did they bring that guy back? And most of the times I have a reason, you know, like, Sergeant Slaughter's back because he used to be a big babyface in the 80s, and he was a big name, and he was former WWF champion, so that maybe they thought having him on TV was going to help. Ravishing Rick Rude was one of the best workers in the late 80s, early 90s, and maybe they thought having him around was going to, you know, pop a rating here or there. I cannot explain what they were thinking in 1998, bringing back the Quebecers.
I am so baffled by the Quebecers. I don't understand them at all. Why does the one have an eye patch? And why does the one have an eye patch?
There is a story. So, Jacques Rougeau,
right,
was the Mountie.
Okay.
Okay, that's the guy who has the longer hair that is basically bald on top.
The Mountie always gets his man.
Yes, right? That was him. So he used to dress like a Mountie. Then he brought in a partner, Pierre, Eye Patch Man, and he was called Pierre, so it was Quebecer Pierre and the Mountie, and then they became the Quebecers. So they were two Mounties together.
And now they're calling them Jacques and Pierre here, right?
Yeah. So they became the Mounties together, and I think it was 1993, and they wore, like, you know, the red and black gear.
They were both Mounties.
They were both Mounties. And they became the WWF Tag Team Champions. They had a good run. They had good matches with, like, Marty Jannetty and the 1-2-3 Kid, the Steiners. But they were pretty good. And then they left the WWF in 94. Now, Pirate Eye Man came back to the WWF in 1995 as Jean-Pierre Lafitte, where he was a pirate with an eye patch who stole Bret Hart's jacket. And they had a pay-per-view match over the fact that he stole Bret Hart's jacket.
I mean, that sounds kind of amazing, I'm not going to lie.
Then Pierre left, so now they're back, and now what they've done, for whatever reason, is they have basically morphed Pierre's gimmicks together by making him a Quebecer again, but they're not Mounties anymore, apparently, but he still has the eye patch from when he briefly became a pirate.
It doesn't make any sense, but at least there's, I guess, a reason for the eye patch, because it's just left over from a former life. What I don't understand
the biggest problem is, with the whole thing, is we don't have the theme song. Now, you've not heard the theme song.
No, I have not.
I am going to, actually, we're going to pause this recording, and I'm going to play this theme song to Sandra, and then we'll come back. Bear with me 1 second, folks. We're going to play it now. I'm going to play the theme song now. This is the Quebecers theme song, and when we come back, we're going to get Sandra's take on why this should have been used. We'll be right back. Here is the Quebecers theme song.
We're like the Mounties. We're handsome, we're brave, we're strong. We're not the Mounties, because we are forced along. You can try to run, that you can never hide. I like the mountains. We always get our man. We're not the mountains. We're handsome.
We're brave.
We're strong. We're not the mountains. Cause we enforce the law. You can try to run, but you can never hide.
Kenny, I have so many questions.
Like, feel free. Okay. Feel free to ask any questions about that song that you have.
So, first of all, is this the song that would have played when the Quebecers came out on this episode of Raw?
No, no, that's what I'm saying. They didn't bring it back.
They didn't bring it back. Okay. That's a travesty, because this song is incredible. Are they saying they're not the Mounties?
No, they're now the Quebecers.
Right. But why are they saying we're not the Mounties because we enforce the law when the actual point of a Mountie is to enforce the law?
I mean, that's a good question.
I don't understand. But, and they're still saying that they always get their man, but they're not Mounties now? Why couldn't they be Mounties and also get their man?
That's the beauty of the Quebecers. They don't make sense.
I think I love them a lot more now, like, having heard this song, because it absolutely makes no sense. It makes as much sense as whatever Pierre guy, Eyepatch Man, having American flag stuff on his boots. Did you notice this?
The whole thing baffles me. They went to WCW.
There are red stripes and a blue background with white stars. That's American flag. And I even Googled, I was like, this isn't some other flag that I'm just conflating with the American flag. No, like, his boots look like they are paying homage to the American flag, and they're from Quebec. I don't understand.
Well, so now, Bearman, they went to WCW in 1997 to be called the Amazing French Canadians.
The Amazing French Canadians?
So now they're back in the WWF. Jacques Rougeau looks like he has aged 46 years. In the last 3 years. They come out, to very little fanfare, to have a match with Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack. Because,
I mean, none of this seems like a good idea.
So you have a guy who has a death wish, who wants to, like, kill people. You have a guy with a chainsaw, and you have two men proclaiming they are no longer Mounties, but they want to get their man.
Wrestling.
Terrible match. Quebecers are going for a spike pile driver till Cactus Jack breaks up, and then Cactus applies the mandible claw, even though he's Cactus Jack. Problematic. That's a DQ, funnily enough.
He keeps doing that. He did that as Dude Love the other week too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. But even in 1998, as bad as the refs are, that is a DQ. So, and then Cactus clotheslines the Quebecers out to the floor, and then Terry Funk, as Chainsaw Charlie, does a springing dive.
He really needs to stop doing springboard moves and trying to do a moonsault and all of this. I mean, bless his heart, but it's not good. I just worry for him.
This whole thing was great. Absolutely great. You've got the Quebecers.
Incredible.
You've got this. The Quebecers. You've got Terry Funk doing a dive. You've got Cactus Jack clawing a referee. I'd take that over Raw 25. Tell you that right now.
Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie are not the most effective tag team in terms of winning, because they just sort of forget that they're in a wrestling match and just want to destroy people with a barbed wire bat and a chainsaw. So,
a bad thing.
No, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that, you know, winning is not their strong point. Being absolutely mental is their strong point. It did make me laugh at one point when Michael Cole's like, the Quebecers are still dishing out punishment, when Cactus Jack clearly had them in hand. Like, Cactus Jack was doing fine. And then he, like, immediately after that just knocks them together, and Cole's like, oh, I guess he's doing all right. Yeah, because he's been fine this whole match. I don't even understand what the Quebecers are, but...
They are terrible. So yeah, I mean, the Quebecers are back. They are awful, but I'm still baffled by all of it. I'm baffled why they're back. I'm baffled why they didn't use the funny music. I'm baffled why they're not dressed like Mounties anymore. I'm baffled about Jacques Rougeau's hair. I'm baffled about how Terry Funk can do a dive at 53. I'm baffled about Ahmed Johnson. I'm baffled about Vic Venom. Just baffled, really.
Yeah. This entire episode was full of baffling
things. I love the idea that Mike Tyson has arrived to the World Wrestling Federation. The first thing that's on is two former Mounties, one who used to be a pirate, fighting a guy with a pair of tights in his head with a chainsaw who's 53 doing a dive, while the other guy claws a referee. He must have felt right at home.
I know, right? Why does Cactus Jack give the mandible claw to the referee?
Just saying.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Welcome to 1998.
I just don't understand. It was fun. It was a nightmare, but it was fun.
DX are still looking for Undertaker. They asked the Minis. They have no idea either where he is. The WWF agents are basically, like, doing everything but giving Mike Tyson an erotic massage, but they're all over him.
I mean, you say that they're not giving him an erotic massage, but we can't see that far down.
Not sure. Maybe they are. Maybe.
I'm guessing that they are. I mean, he looks pretty happy at the time. It did make me laugh a little bit when Sean made China pick up one of the Minis so that he was at eye level. And then Hunter, of course, because racism is like, nachos grandes, amigos.
I've noticed that Sean is actually a lot funnier when he's interacting with China.
Like, yeah, Sean and China actually have a pretty good dynamic. When Sean and Hunter interact, it's like, it's insufferable. But, I don't know, China seems to calm him.
Up next, Sondra, is... Oh, God.
Why? Why is this happening? Why?
The NWA North American Heavyweight Champion, Jeff Jarrett...
Set it on fire. Set the championship on fire and send them all to the sun. Where is Kane to set this thing on fire so it doesn't have to be in my life anymore? Oh my goodness, this was terrible. And not in a fun way.
Talk to me about Jeff Jarrett versus Blackjack Bradshaw. Just as a concept.
Just as a concept, why is this happening? At first, when the camera came on them and Blackjack Windham and Blackjack Bradshaw were in the ring, and they said NWA North American Championship, I was trying to remember who the champion was, and I was like, did Blackjack Windham win the championship? Is this going to be a Blackjack's Explode match? And it wasn't, and that, I don't think, would have been any better, to be honest. But just, Jeff Jarrett doesn't even have his voiceover anymore. Like, the voiceover that I used to mock him for, even that's gone. And why is he accompanied by, like, I understand why he's accompanied by Jim Cornette, I guess, but I don't really understand, because Jim Cornette put... Okay, so I'm trying to go through the history of this belt that should be set on fire. Jim Cornette set Jeff Jarrett versus Blackjack Windham up for a match for the NWA North American Championship. But now,
As if he acted like he was impartial, but really he wanted Jarrett to win, so he helped Jarrett beat Windham.
Right, so...
Then he introduced the Rock and Roll Express to kill all of our souls.
Yes, of course he did. And so now Jeff Jarrett is accompanied by Jim Cornette and the Rock and Roll Express because they're all in some sort of faction now or something. And so then at the end of the match, when, because at some point, doesn't Windham accidentally hit Bradshaw and cause him to lose or something? I don't know. It was terrible.
Because he tries to so Barry Windham, there's loads of interference from the Rock and Roll Express.
Mm-hmm.
And then Barry Windham comes in and it's like he goes to hit a lariat on Jarrett, but he hits Bradshaw by, like, mistake.
Right, but and so then the Rock and Roll Express try to get involved too, and Jeff Jarrett gets the pin on Bradshaw by grabbing his tights. And it's funny because if you rewind the network at this point, and the captioning just came on randomly, and it said Jeff Jarrett's got the thighs instead of tights in the captioning. And Mr. Sondra walked by and was like, "Oh, is that what Jim Cornette sees in him? He's got the thighs to be champion."
What does Mr. Sondra think about the fact that you watch the retro shows?
Oh, he's the one who makes me watch the retro shows half the time. Because I'll be watching something, anything other than Retro Raw, and he'll be like, Sondra, you need to watch Retro Raw right now. Because I think he's like, if you're going to be taking up the TV, then you might as well be doing your homework.
I just love the idea going, I don't want to!
That's exactly how it goes.
But yeah, so Barry Windham turns on Bradshaw. And he's now Black Jack Windham. Barry Windham is now part of the NWA. Now, the faction is at its strongest. You have the Rock and Roll Express. You have Jim Cornette. You have Barry Windham. And you have the NWA North American champion, Jeff Jarrett. Can anyone compete with this faction?
I mean, so my theory here, because they're talking about how Windham turned on Bradshaw because he's a former NWA champion. Like, somehow having worked for the NWA, like, I don't know. Does it put a curse upon your soul and you're just destined to join this pile of shite? I don't know. But they talk about Windham turning on Bradshaw because he's a former NWA. Do they just think that if they say the letters NWA that we'll think NWO and think that it's interesting?
I think that's the idea. I don't believe it as an execution. But yeah, that's... I mean, this
because
is just...
seems like they're trying to call NWA like a faction, and I don't understand that. It's like they're trying to be outside invaders or something from another promotion.
But again,
but
do you
it
know, do you
fails
know
way,
like,
on every level.
You know, sometimes you go, "Oh, that didn't work," but I get why they tried it. I don't get why they're trying this.
No, I don't get why they're trying this either. And it like, doesn't make any sense.
And the thing is, like, usually, like, there's some stuff that you're just kind of be like, "Oh, I don't like that," but sometimes maybe it's like, "Well, maybe it just doesn't like age well," you know? Like maybe in 1998, that'd have been okay.
But the Rock and Roll Express haven't aged well up to this point. Why were they brought back?
But even in 1998, this was bad.
Yeah.
So anyway, Shawn Michaels and DX are still looking for The Undertaker. Shawn Michaels is, you know, telling Triple H in China he sincerely wants to find The Undertaker. You know, they had some fun with the broads and the hearse and the minis was fun, but he really wants to find the guy. And then that takes us into the war zone where...
No, this was the weirdest thing. I have to mention mm-hmm. this. So they talk about, you know, okay, we promised people The Undertaker. We promised people The Undertaker. And then the lights fade. So you think that The Undertaker's going to come out or they're going to find him or something. And they go straight to a Martin Luther King Jr. graphic because it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It was the weirdest timing ever.
Yeah, it's mad. But so we start hour two with it looks like the traditional Undertaker entrance, but it's Shawn Michaels in the Undertaker gear essentially. And then
JR's like, "We have not seen the Undertaker since the Royal Rumble." You mean last night when he got chopped and burned?
It is quite a fun gag getting, you know, because earlier on we got the casket and it was Kane. Now we get the rafters and it's Shawn. Like, it's quite a good build up of like, you're not getting Undertaker, but everybody else is going to try and be him.
I did worry a little bit when he was coming down from the rafters, because I was like, have they hanged the Undertaker?
I remember the last time he came down to the rafters, he had a sad eye and he was dressed like a bat.
I know, and that was wonderful.
So China whips out a big salami. There's lots of dick jokes. And when I say lots, I don't want to underemphasize how many there are.
I mean, Sean at one point sticks the salami in his pants and then begins stroking it as... or beating it, because he was talking about beating Owen Hart, and it's like he's jerking off his...
Hunter's going to give a title shot to Owen Hart next week, because even with a torn MCL, he can still beat him. And then he says, there's no need to ride Space Mountain, because it's old and broken down. If you want to see the stars, call Triple H, because he's got the rocket you want to ride. Which is funny, given that later on he would go on to be like Ric Flair's wingman, but here he's basically making fun of how old he is.
Yeah, that's
in 1998.
There was a girl in the crowd who was like clapping in the least enthusiastic way for this segment, and I felt like I understood her, except I wouldn't have been clapping. I would have just been sitting there.
Sean talks about, you know, the next opponent, Stone Cold Steve Austin. The WWF title is the final mountain for Austin left to climb around here, but Sean's at the top of that mountain, and Austin can ask MD in the WWF, and everybody he ran south, Sean lays down for absolutely nobody. And DX then throw marshmallows at the crowd. Like, there's a kind of interesting balance of, like, real life. You know, Sean bringing up the whole, I don't lay down for anybody after Survivor Series and stuff. Austin's on the rise. I can imagine if you were, like, a casual fan, or not casual, but if you were reading bits and pieces online and stuff, you would kind of be concerned, like, will Michaels put Austin over? Like, will he actually do it? Because he doesn't tend to do it usually. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's an interesting dynamic to bring into the match. But my favourite thing of all time is Mike Tyson hanging out with the Legion of Doom.
And then Sonny interrupts to feel up Mike Tyson.
And
as
Mike
well.
Tyson.
I mean, what a cast of characters.
But what I love is Sonny comes on to Mike Tyson and he has to let her know he's married. So Mike Tyson's the sane one here.
I just like Hawk in the background as Mike Tyson is basically turning down Sonny. He goes, oh, what a rush, a major rush.
Yeah, no, so Animal goes, oh, what a rush, huh? And then Hawk's like, yeah, major rush. Why is Animal stealing his catchphrase?
I don't know.
The thing is, like, I loved a lot of stuff in this episode. Like, even if you hated it, it's just, they're so, it's so wacky. Like, Mike Tyson hanging out with the Legion of Doom. I mean, this is a thing that happened in the world. And Sonny interrupts, tries to come to Mike Tyson, and he says no. I mean, you just...
Wrestling.
I mean, wrestling. It's just the best. But then, with the best comes the worst, because up next, the Honky Tonk Man's on commentary, which gave the dread that he's looking for another protege. Is there anyone else on the roster who you think Honky Tonk Man could look for that could shake, rattle, and roll?
No, he didn't find one in the first place.
He's in commentary for Los Boricuas against the Headbangers, Taka Michinoku, and Owen Hart. It looks like they're trying to do
Owen Hart involved in this?
It looks like they're trying to do some sort of weird diversity session.
It kind of does, actually.
You mean like, let's get four Mexicans, a couple of moshers, a Jap.
They're Puerto Rican.
Four Puerto Ricans, two moshers, a Jap, and a Canadian. That's probably their ethos of what they wanted to do. Honky Tonk Man's telling us that Mike Tyson's been following him all day, asking for an autograph, which is just great.
Why is the Honky Tonk Man here, though? Like, why?
Because they employ him and they're trying to figure out something for him to do. I don't know.
He shouldn't. He should go away.
I was just annoyed that the commentators didn't, you know, really journalistically go at the Honky Tonk Man. But, you know, why did he not win the Royal Rumble? What went wrong?
That's true. They were not asking the hard-hitting questions.
This is very short and sweet. Owen Hart, of course, taps out Jesus, because Jesus, we've established, is not a wrestler, but somehow is in a wrestling faction. Then Owen accepts Triple H's challenge for next week. He doesn't know what Triple H is up to, but he'll be more than happy to get his hands on him. Mike Tyson's hanging out with the Nation of Domination. I'm saying nothing. I almost love the idea of, like, Mike Tyson hanging out with the Nation of Domination, and they're just like, so, Martin Luther King, remember him? Remember what he used to say?
Right.
This is my favourite thing. Oh, it's so good. The Rock, the Intercontinental Champion, comes out to face Ahmed Johnson.
The first thing I wrote down about this is just, oh boy. Like, just at the thought of it.
So Ahmed Johnson takes a back bump, and it is the... Like, I've never taken a back bump, but I feel like mine would look more natural than Ahmed Johnson taking a back bump here.
It's not good. I mean, when Ahmed gets to the ring, he doesn't even stand up before Rocky starts beating him up. He had time to stand up, but he cannot stand up when he gets into a ring. So Rocky just beats him up for a long time.
Interestingly enough, though, Rock does hit the people's elbow for a two count at one
point. Mm-hmm. And I actually wrote that down. Is this the first time we've seen a super theatrical people's elbow? Because we've seen him hit it before. But he actually stopped and stood over Ahmed and paused and looked around before running the ropes.
I mean, if you're ever going to take time to be sort of creative and try out new moves that might be risky, try it with Ahmed Johnson. It's going to take him 25 seconds to get up anyway.
Yeah, he won't be moving.
Ahmed's terrible. Mark Henry comes at ringside. Ahmed hits a spine buster and then he's going to go for the Pearl River Plunge. I'm terrified at the idea that he's going to try it. But then Mark Henry whacks Ahmed in the back as he comes off the ropes. That staggers Ahmed into a rock bottom for the pin. The crowd, for some reason, still love Ahmed Johnson, but God knows why. And
they remember the glory days of Ahmed Johnson, I'm sure.
The glory days of Ahmed Johnson. Oh, God. Go to Patreon 3 fucking hours ago. Ken Shamrock runs down and chases Rock and Mark Henry away. So, yeah. Ahmed Johnson.
I like Rocky running away from Ken Shamrock because he doesn't want to die. Because you can tell Ken Shamrock's just raging. Mm-hmm. He's like, I fucking hate you.
Mike Tyson's hanging out with Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie. I wish I could hear the full conversations of these two.
Oh my goodness, seriously. I want a whole vignette of this. Like, I want Mike Tyson with the Legion of Doom and then Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie. I think those would be super fun little vignettes. Instead of just seeing that they're talking, I want to hear those conversations.
Then Tyson's with
I just wrote down, this seems ill-advised, like, to have them all together.
Oh, yeah, yeah, terrible idea. Then he's with DX. My favourite thing of all of his stuff he does, he's comparing his arm size with China. It's the best thing ever.
It is quite good.
Like, I just love the idea that he's like, hey, great arms, wanna see who's bigger? And China's like, yes.
And she's like, I will win. Why does he have a Mao tattoo?
I do not. He does point to Sean's WWF title at one point, which, you know, is interesting. Mm-hmm. And then we get the New Age Outlaws versus the Godwins.
Why? Why do the Godwins get another title shot? Why?
And the thing is, like, the New Age Outlaws have kind of been, like, you know, making their way up the ranks and kind of doing a lot of stuff and getting a lot of TV time. But the Godwins basically control 95% of this match.
Well, because Road Dogg doesn't even get in the match. Billy Gunn's just in there, right? So Billy Gunn and Road Dogg come out and they're wearing overalls. Something about respecting Southern justice, which I don't really understand. But Henry Godwin strips Billy Gunn's overalls off immediately. And JR's like, well, this is the first time we've seen Billy Gunn in tights, because that's a milestone. And then, you know, I checked out for a while. I don't really know what happened in the middle of the match. But I don't think Road Dogg was ever even in it. He's just on the apron. And then at one point, one of the Godwins is pinning Billy Gunn. Road Dogg actually shows that he is still around. He has still been in the corner because he breaks up the pin. He gets chucked out immediately. So Road Dogg does nothing in this match at all.
Nothing. Zero. But they do have
He throws the pig
the toy
to Billy
pig.
Gunn. Because, yeah, the toy pig that Billy Gunn carried out when they were making their entrance in overalls. He had a toy pig to kind of mock the Godwins or whatever, right? And so Road Dogg throws the pig to Billy Gunn, who uses it to hit Phineas. And of course, it was loaded with a brick, and Henry's raging afterwards when they find out that there was a brick, and he's yelling at commentary and the camera because they've like, are they trying to turn the Godwins back babyface? What even is this? Other than shite.
Just shite. Just shite. It's terrible. Then we get JR wants to plug the WWF Superstar line, and he plugs it by saying, this could be a macho week for the WWF, so he's basically wanting you to sign up before the line as if they've got the macho man, which they do not.
So I was going to ask you about this. Were there rumors that Macho Man was going to come back or something, or are they just saying random words?
There was the year before, like late 96, early 97, his contract came up, and there was at least a conversation, but not this time.
But not this time. This is just random.
This is just random.
Right.
Now, just to put you in the picture, when I was watching this as a kid, like, so what I used to do is I used to, like, record Raw, but I would stop at the ad break and then re-record when it came back on, and it would always last, like, an hour and 37 minutes or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, throughout the whole show, they've been advertising, we're going to hear from the winner of the Royal Rumble, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and then separately, we're going to hear from Mike Tyson. And I remember it just getting to, like, 7 minutes to the end of the show. And Tyson's coming out, and that was when it clicked. Fuck. Austin's gonna come out. And it's, I think this is legit one of my top five favorite angles on Raw of all time. It is so great. Because when it was finished, like, you just had no idea what was going on. Like, at the time, you were like, is Austin gonna fight Tyson? Is Mike Tyson gonna wrestle? What does that mean for WrestleMania? Because Austin won the Rumble, and like, you just had no idea what was going to happen. So so Vince comes down, gets booed out of the building, even though he's still trying to be a good guy. Because it's Vince.
Yeah.
He introduces...
It's not working, by the way. He is not a good guy.
He introduces the baddest man on the planet, Iron Mike Tyson, with his entourage. Tyson is a lifelong wrestling fan. Vince asks him who his favorite square, and he shouts out Bruno Sammartino, who is not a fan of the WWF, so Vince obviously does not like that answer.
Who did he say then afterwards? He was like, I can't remember who he said afterwards, but he was like, and somebody else too, right?
So Don Morocco? Or was it Nikolai Volkov?
No, Mike Tyson says Nikolai Volkov afterwards.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Vince brings up some other name, and Tyson's like, yeah, Nikolai Volkov. You know, I go way back. I'm just so happy to be here.
Yeah, I also love the fact that it's clear that he's not watched it in about 13 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So Vince says, you know, he's going to make the announcement. He's like, you know, Mike Tyson on March 29 at WrestleMania. And then the glass hits. Stone Cold Steve Austin comes out. Tons of referees and agents are like running to get ahead of Austin. Austin hits all four corners like he always does. Vince stops him and asks him what he's doing out here. Austin says Tyson's shaking all the hands of the WWF superstars, making friends over here. And it's making Austin violently ill. Tyson's trying to be friendly and trying to, you know, extend his hand out. Austin refuses. And Austin says, you know, while I respect what you've done in the boxing world, this isn't boxing. You're in Stone Cold's ring, and that's something, you're messing with Stone Cold, and that's something you just don't do. Austin says that he wants a piece of Mike Tyson's ass, and
just a piece of it.
Just a piece, not a lot. Austin tells him, you know, that that Austin's the world's toughest son of a bitch, and he feels he can beat Tyson any day of the week, twice on Sunday. Does Austin think Tyson can beat his ass? Hell no. Does Austin think he can beat his? Oh, hell yeah. Now, Tyson at this point is still trying to, you know, put the hand out for a handshake and, you know, not have a problem. And then Austin says, and in case your hearing isn't so good, I always carry a little bit of sign language. Gives him the two middle fingers. Tyson shoves Austin. A brawl starts. When I was watching this when I was a kid, I thought Tyson and Austin were the two brawling. Because the camera's so good.
It looked like it. It looked like it. It really did. And I mean, people are literally jumping on top of Steve Austin to keep him down.
Yeah, they are like keeping, it's almost like he's being arrested. And, you know, there's a massive...
And he's still fighting. Trey Briscoe and Pat Patterson, everyone's like on top of Austin.
People are grabbing his leg. And you can't get to him. And then Vince has like one leg out of the ring and he's like, you've ruined it, damn it, you've ruined it. And we go off the air and it's... I'm speechless. It's so good. So, I mean, and it's harder, I guess, for you watching it now because you know the outcome, right? You know where it goes, you know what happens. But, like, as a segment, if you were to try and sort of just go from the lineage of watching Retro Raw without knowing where it goes, how do you think they did with, you know, they've got one segment to make a first impression with Tyson and get Austin over and try and do it all in the same thing? Talk about how they did.
I mean, they did excellent. This is a great segment, and this is one of those ones where it is replayed on every, you know, Raw recap history of Raw. I mean, they talked about the segment on Raw 25 plenty, right? And there's a reason for it, because it was incredibly compelling. It's interesting that Steve Austin would come out to confront Mike Tyson when Steve Austin is the number one contender to the WWF Championship, and he seems more concerned with Tyson at this point than the belt. But what I like so much about the segment is that, and I think comparing it to today, is Mike Tyson's a celebrity coming in, right? And he's an interloper in the world of wrestling. He's not a wrestler. He's a boxer. So Austin coming out and saying, yeah, you might be great in the boxing world, but this is my ring. You know, when you step in this ring, you're disrespecting Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's something you don't do. He's defending wrestling, and he's allowed to. He's allowed to defend wrestling against the celebrity. And it's not like he makes Tyson look like a chump, and it's not like Austin gets beat up or anything like that. I think the way they were restrained was super, super smart. Like, they didn't let Austin and Tyson actually touch. They didn't let them brawl. And it does make you kind of want to see them. Like, what would happen if they had a fight? This is crazy, right? Like, the idea of it is crazy. And it does make you want to see more of it. I think it takes a little bit of the focus off Steve Austin wanting to go for the belt, but it's just kind of, it leads to more chaos and more uncertainty and more questions. So, yeah, I mean, if Mike Tyson is going to continue to be involved up through to WrestleMania, then you're kind of like, is he going to fight Stone Cold? Like, what's going to happen? How is that going to work? Because he's supposed to fight Shawn Michaels. And I don't know. I have a lot of questions.
And this
I would if I didn't know what happened.
Yeah, well, so this was picked up by every major news outlet in the States. USA Today picked it up in the newspaper. ESPN. But this wasn't like when ESPN was legit sports. So it wasn't like a handy relationship. And what it was being reported as in the press was Mike Tyson may face Steve Austin at WrestleMania.
Definitely what they're trying to insinuate, right? Like, they're trying to make you think that that might happen.
And then what's interesting is because you're kind of thinking about, okay, so say Tyson's being paid this sort of like $3.5 million. He has to do something good. And you can't really, and I don't want to get into all the twists and turns because I don't know how much you know of what happens or how we get to WrestleMania. But anyway, I think what's good about it is Mike Tyson is involved. Like, there's storylines and there's twists and turns, and it's not, because I think if he'd just been a referee and that was it, there's no drama there. You're not going to buy the pay-per-view.
Right.
Whereas he's got the thing with Austin. You know, he's now, there's now an issue where you go, if Mike Tyson's involved with WrestleMania and Steve Austin's there, I need to see what's going to happen. And then, and even when they come back from commercial, Vince is trying to smooth things over with Mike Tyson. Tyson wants to fight Austin. He keeps calling Austin a coward and a faggot.
Yeah, he yells faggot right into the camera, and I was like, oh boy, how is that not bleeped?
But also, it's kind of great in the way that he, like, it makes you love Austin, because there's part of you, that, I mean, I don't know if this probably wasn't intentional, but there's part of you kind of be like, you know, Austin's a prick for just ruining this thing that was cool. But when Mike Tyson just starts calling him faggot and coward down the camera, you're kind of like, I hope Austin kicks his ass.
Oh, see, and I've been 100% on Austin's side this whole time, which isn't shocking because I like Austin and I don't like Mike Tyson, like, as a human. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, and even when Mike Tyson comes out for his interview with Vince McMahon, the reaction from the crowd is pretty mixed. There are some people chanting Tyson, but there are a lot of boos too. And the music is pretty loud, so you can't hear it that well. But when the music kind of shuts down, you can hear there are a lot of people booing Mike Tyson. Everyone's intrigued by him being there, but a lot of people don't really like Mike Tyson because he's, you know, a reprehensible human. So it's one of those situations where when Stone Cold Steve Austin comes to confront him, Stone Cold Steve Austin, who's our favorite, of course I'm going to be on Stone Cold's side. And Stone Cold is defending wrestling. I love wrestling, right? So he's the one I really should be behind. And then Mike Tyson, you know, yelling faggot into the camera at Steve Austin, of course, that makes me even more on Austin's side because I'm like, Mike Tyson, you're gross. Go away.
And that's, yeah, so it's, there's a layer of story there. Yes,
I'm still amazed that that was able to air and not get bleeped, though. I'm very confused about what gets bleeped on Retro Raw.
There's no way to decipher. So that's the show. Also, tiny note, Juanita McMahon, who was Vince's dad's second wife, passed away on, like, January 17th of liver cancer at age 81. And I think Vince had been quite close to her when he was older, when he started being friends with his dad, so... I think her death was mentioned on Raw.
Raw opened up with an in memory of Juanita McMahon graphic.
So that was that. Overall, it's funny. Like, I don't even care. This is a thumbs up show for me because the Tyson Austin thing was amazing. The Tyson Austin thing was amazing. The opening segment with Kane and Paul Bearer was amazing. I loved the shitness of Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie against the Quebecers. Ahmed Johnson not moving cracks me up, and Mike Tyson hanging out with the Legion of Doom and comparing guns with China is what I want in life. So, like, there's dross on it for sure, but there was enough on it for me to just enjoy it. So that's my. But I can imagine where you're gonna go, Sandra. What?
This is such a thumbs down show. I don't like it. I mean, I feel like I'm actually more intrigued by Tyson and Austin because I'm watching it in retrospect, because I don't get as into these celebrity angles, especially if I'm not into the celebrity. So if I would have been watching this in 1998, then I would have been like, well, I don't like Mike Tyson. So why is he here? And why is he such an important part of this? And I mean, the New Age Outlaws faced the Godwins. Owen Hart is in a match with the Barriquas. And that, I mean, I love the Headbangers, but the Headbangers and Taka Michinoku and Owen Hart as a team, like that just says Owen Hart's doing nothing. And that upsets me because I really like Owen Hart and, you know, he's supposed to be facing Triple H next week and he's doing this on this show. Why? The Quebecers and Chainsaw Charlie are delightful, but like none of it makes any sense. Tom Brandy versus Mark Miro, go fuck off. I just,
it's impossible for me to put a thumbs down on a show that has that closing angle in the opening one. It just, that, for me, that's kind of, if I put a thumbs in the middle or down, I would just feel that I couldn't for that. But I get why, the dross on it is not as enjoyable. Where could people find you on Twitter if they want to say hi or say they agree or disagree or chat about anything?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
You can also go over to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for a new NXT podcast up. There'll be a review of TakeOver on Sunday. There'll be a review of the Royal Rumble on Monday. You can listen to our Retro Royal Rumble review from 1998 on there as well. And that's about it. Sandra, whose theme song would you like to play us out this week?
I mean, we already listened to the Quebecers, so we don't need to play their theme song. Let's go. You know what? Let's go with Ahmed Johnson. Bless him.
Let's listen to it while we still can. Here's Ahmed Johnson. Bye, everybody.
Bye.